Yes, so we've been going through this series, Interpersonal Relationships, thinking about what it means to love one another. And as we've heard, as we've progressed through the service, we're going to be thinking about building up. Now, this picture is of Amish people helping one another to build a barn. That's what they do, isn't it? Barn raisers. Together, they build their barns up. And together, at Argyle, we are to build each other up. That's what Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 26. What then shall we say, brothers and sisters? When you come together, each of you has a hymn or a word of instruction, a revelation, a tongue, or an interpretation. Everything must be done so that the church may be built up. So let's think for a moment about this phrase, built up. It's from the Greek word oikodome, and it literally means build a house. That's what the word means. And Paul uses it metaphorically here. It means, or he means when he uses it, to edify one another, to improve each other, to bless each other, to advance each other in the kingdom, to equip each other to live for God, to strengthen each other in the faith, to make each other's spiritual muscles bigger. That's the sense of how he means it here. It's the act of one who is concerned to promote someone else's growth in their relationship with God. And Paul uses this word quite a lot of times in chapter 14 and quite a lot elsewhere in his writings too. And here's a few examples of that to give you a flavour of how he uses the word. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs. Romans chapter 14, verse 19. Let us therefore make every effort to do what leads to peace and to mutual edification. It's the same word behind built up and edify, this Greek word oikodome. And then in our chapter, 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 17, you are giving thanks well enough, but no one else is edified. And perhaps in that verse you can hear Paul's note of concern. He's like, okay, church, you're right at giving thanks, but I'm concerned that not many people in the Corinthian church are being edified. And that note of concern is because there's a problem in the Corinthian church. Actually, there were many problems in that church, but in chapters 12, 13, and 14, he is addressing one particular problem, and it's this. They had become too individualistic. The reason they came to church was to show off their gifts. They were not concerned to come to church to build one another up. Instead, they showboated. They used their gifts to draw attention to themselves. For them, church was a catwalk, and they strutted up and down like peacocks, showing what their gifts were and wanting everyone to admire them. And a gift that was a particular problem for them was speaking in tongues. Nothing wrong with speaking in tongues, but they were using that gift in a wrong way because they didn't want to use the tongues to edify other people, but just to big themselves up. Look at me, look at my amazing utterances from God. That was the problem that Paul was addressing when he appeals to them to build each other up. Paul has a few things to say to them in the light of this problem. The first thing he says is, church is not all about you. Church is not a place where you come to showcase your amazing Christianity to everyone else. That's childish thinking like that. 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 20, brothers and sisters, he says to them, stop thinking like children. Children are naturally self-centered. The early years are spent a lot of the time training them out of this me, 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 self-centered, life's all about me attitude. He's saying, don't think like that. So his question for them and for us is this: why do you come to church? Is church, is our goal primarily for you or for others? See, the Corinthians, they needed a paradigm shift. They had got themselves into this wrong-headed thinking, church is all about me. Paul is saying, no, it's about others too. Now, of course, we do come to church to get built up from what goes on at the front, from the singing, the worship, the Bible reading, the preaching, teaching, and that's okay, that's good. But that's not all what church is about. Church is also about every member building up the other members. I want to talk to you a bit about peace to illustrate this principle of church not just being about us but about others. Now, did you know that when they're in this V formation, perhaps you've seen them occasionally, when they're in that formation, they can fly at around 40 to 50 miles an hour. It's amazing, isn't it? And apparently the reason for this is that this is a very specific formation, and each flap of the wings gives lift to the goose behind. So they're doing it together. They're assembled like that together for a reason. If they thought about their journey individualistically, they wouldn't be able to go as far. Apparently, they can go 70% further in a group than they can go alone. And that's how we should think. We're in this together. We're on a journey, pilgriming through this world with Christ, with God. But we need to do it together. We need to help one another along. Church isn't just about me. Church is about us. But there's another thing about geese. They honk. And they're not critics. They're encouragers. That's why they honk. They make that noise to exhort one another, especially those up front, saying, keep going, maintain your speed, stay on course, we're here for you. It's that kind of mutual encouragement noise that they make. So together, that flapping and that honking builds the others up in the group, and they can make that journey, and they can fly many, many miles without tiring, and they can keep going and stay on course. And that's what Paul wants us to be like. We can learn a lot from geese. Church is not about you. That's the first point that he makes to the Corinthians and to the Argiles as well. But then he makes another big point, and he says this: use your gifts to build others up. Now, the Corinthians were not short on gifts. They were a very, very gifted church. Paul lists all of the gifts that they had in chapter 12. Gifts of wisdom, gifts of knowledge, of faith, healing, miraculous powers, prophecy, distinguishing between spirits, speaking in tongues, interpretation of tongues, and there were more as well. So they were not short on gifts. Their problem, of course, was how they used those gifts. And what he says through chapters 12, 13, and 14, he kind of repeats himself really and says, use your gifts to build others up. He repeats and repeats for emphasis. He wants them to get this. And verse 12 of chapter 14 is a key verse in his argument, in what he says. Since you are eager for the gifts of the Spirit, try to excel in those that build up the church. That's what Paul wants, for them, for us, to use our gifts to build up and to edify each other, not to show off, but instead to bless one another. What are you gifted at? There are many different gifts, as Paul has listed a few of them, and they're not just, you know, a gift doesn't have to be a kind of sensational talent that everyone notices. Doesn't have to be a super spiritual thing or just a spiritual thing either. A gift really is something that just comes naturally that we can do without thinking about too much. It comes to us. What are you gifted at? You know, gifts can be as simple as smiling at newcomers and welcoming them, listening to people and empathizing with them. God has deliberately giving us different gifts. As I look, as I scan through all of you, I see that. Some of you are really good at computers, some of you are really good at music and stuff like that. And that's deliberate. God does that to each church. He gives each member a different gift. And he wants us, first of all, to use our gifts, not to neglect them. But when we do use them, to use them to build one another up. That's his desire. That's why there's such diversity in Argyle, in every Christian church dotted around the UK and the world. so that together we can complement and help each other, do things that others can't, and so on. I want to tell you about Charles Plum. He was a US jet fighter. He flew jets in Vietnam. He was based on the aircraft carrier, the Kitty Hawk. And he was good at what he did. He'd flown 75 combat missions, and then he was shot down. He ejected, parachuted to safety, but then was caught and spent 6 years in a labor camp. And he managed to escape, eventually back in the US now, and I think he sort of tours around and tells people about his experiences and what he learned. But he tells the story that one day him and his wife were sitting in a restaurant back in the USA, and they were having dinner, and this guy comes up to him and says, "You're Plum. You're the jet fighter pilot." And he's like, and the guy's like, "You got shot down, but survived." And the guy's like, Charles Plum is like, "How do you know that?" He said, "I worked on that ship. I was on the Kitty Hawk, and I packed your parachute. And it worked. And that's why you're here." And they chatted a bit, and the man went off. And that night, Charles Plum was thinking a lot about that guy. And he was thinking, I never knew that guy in that community on that aircraft carrier, the Kitty Hawk. I never met him. Maybe I passed him occasionally in the corridors. Maybe I even said hello to him or something. And he thought about how his role was I'm the jet pilot, a kind of glamorous role. I'm the Top Gun sort of man. But then he thought about that guy's role, you know, down below decks, over and over, a little bit of a boring job, carefully folding the silk of the parachute, carefully arranging the strings and the lines so they didn't get tangled when the cord was pulled. And he really thought, wow, every single job on that aircraft carrier is so important, is so vital. And it's the same in church. It's exactly the same. I mean, that guy, he persevered at his job, which nobody really saw him doing, which was very unglamorous, and as a result, he saved the life of that fighter pilot. And Charles Plum's experience really teaches us and helps us remember that every church needs every person playing their part and using their gift if it's to function successfully. That's how we have to roll if we want to go anywhere and achieve anything as a church. Now, some gifts are more glamorous, you know, like a fighter pilot sort of thing in church. Some are out of the way and apparently unimportant, but none of them are unimportant really, are they? Some of us have the sort of parachute packing gifts, but they're just as important as the up the front, noticeable gifts. All are vital. Your gift is important. It really is, even if you don't think much of it. So, don't think to yourself, oh, my gift's just insignificant. It's not really worth me even bothering with it, because the thing I do, no one notices anyway, and it doesn't really do much good in the church. It is important. You should persevere. Use your gift confidently and energetically, whatever it is. And remember, your gift could save someone, just like that parachute packer's gift saved Charles Plum. It could save them from giving up, from despairing, from losing hope. Just a word, just a hand on the shoulder, whatever it is. Your gift could really help someone continue on in their spiritual walk. Gifts are all different. Gifts are so important. You're important and your gift is important too. And I think Paul saying build up, he implicitly means don't tear down. This is so crucial. Because you know what it's like out there in the week, especially if we're working or at school, whatever, it's difficult, isn't it, to stand up. And often we get knocked down during the week. And it's a difficult environment often, the work environment, especially if we're trying hard to live and speak for Jesus. And we get knocked down and knocked down and knocked down. And it's no good if we come to church and we get knocked down at church as well. We need to come to church and be strengthened, encouraged to have the energy to go out again the next week. And also, just living the Christian life is hard. It's hard to keep going, to hold on, to follow the way of God. We need each other. Yes, if we hurt each other or sin against each other or we have an issue with one another, we need to talk about it. We've thought about that, haven't we, in previous sermons. But we can do it with this mindset of, I'm going to build this person up, and we avoid tearing down. You're probably wondering why I've got a picture of Joe Konta up there. You probably heard in Wimbledon, after she got knocked out, she was interviewed, and one of the interviewers was not very nice to her at all. He was very hard on her, very critical, very pushy. The way he asked his questions was negative and scathing. And Jo Konta apparently is known for being sort of friendly and accommodating to journalists. But she really stood up to him and said, just stop being so condescending. And I kind of thought, what a shame. We've got this British tennis player. We want a woman to win Wimbledon again, don't we, finally. And okay, she's just lost. Okay, she missed some shots that she should have got. But let's not tear her down. The journalist was British. Like, why are you tearing her down? What, you come on, let's encourage her. Let's try and build her up. Let's not be like that British journalist at our guard to one another. Let's not lay into each other if someone makes a mistake or gets something wrong. Let's try to build each other up so that we can keep going and so that we can be the church that God wants us to be. So, Paul has said these things to the Corinthian church. Church is not all about you. Use your gifts to build one another up. And the point to notice now is this: building up takes effort. I think that Paul very deliberately uses this building metaphor because he's referring back to the building of the temple. His readers would have been reminded of that, the temple in the Old Testament. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 9 and 16 say, "For we are co-workers in God's service. You are God's building, God's temple." And it took effort to build the temple. We've heard a lot about building, haven't we? Building bridges in Kasisi and building rockets and so on. It took a lot of effort to build the temple. It took years and years and years. It took physical labor hewing out the rock from the quarry. It took sweat and it took toil and it took planning. And it wasn't just it took effort from the actual builders. The people were required to give to the building of the temple as well. We see that in Exodus chapter 25, verses 1 to 8. So here, God is telling Moses to tell the people to bring an offering, to give of what they own towards the temple. And he says, give gold, silver, bronze, blue, purple and scarlet yarn, fine linen, goat hair, ram skins dyed red, leather, acacia wood, olive oil, spices, onyx stones, gems, and so on and so on. So they were required, the everyday person who wasn't a builder, were also required to put in the effort to build the temple by sacrificially giving these materials for the temple. And I think Paul wants his readers and wants us to think back to that and to realize, yes, it takes effort. All of you know this, don't we know it? Any of you who've ever done any kind of building work, even if it's just a garden shed, takes effort. It's tiring, takes a lot of planning, takes time, takes heavy lifting and so on. It takes effort. If you ever watched Grand Designs, well, you guys know far more than me because, well, those of you who've been here longer than 5 years, this building, the extension, the refurbishment, took effort, didn't it? But wasn't it worth it? Isn't it worth it? Isn't it worth putting effort in to build something up of value to do it? It's so worth it. So let's do it. Let's own the grind. Let's work hard. Let's put in that effort because it's so worth it. We're doing it for one another. We're doing it for God. I'm going to watch a short video now about effort. It features two triathletes and shows them involved in a triathlon. They're a father and a son. The dad is called Dick Hoyt and his son is called Rick. Confusing, Dick and Rick. But Rick is the son, Dick is the father. And I want you to watch this video and observe the effort that the dad, Dick, puts in for his son while they're doing triathlons. They've finished a race together, putting in effort for one another. I've only done a couple of triathlons in my life. They're only sprint distance, so they were short ones. They were so hard. They were really hard. Did you see the effort that father put in for his son? Especially the first transition after the swim, carrying him after doing that swim and putting him on that special thing for the bike and so on. That's what we're called to do by Paul when he asks us to build one another up. Because it's not easy. It takes effort. But that father was prepared to put in that effort because he wanted his son to experience those triathlons. Let's be prepared to put in the effort to one another so that we can cause one another to experience God more and learn about him and live with him through our lives. Building up takes effort, but it's so worth it. But I want to finish off by thinking about this. What is it that motivates us and will empower us to build each other up, and more importantly, to keep on building each other up? Because it does, we've just seen, it takes effort. We're in this for the long haul. We need some external power. It's difficult. Two things. First of all, it's the joy of seeing other people become built up, become strong and mature and equipped in their faith and so on. It's so rewarding to put the effort in and see them grow. See somebody grow because of the input you've had in their life and encouragement you've done, whether you've taught them or just helped them along the way. So rewarding. It's a bit like gardening, isn't it? You've got this little seed and you plant it, and maybe you start it off in your greenhouse and you nourish it and you protect it, and then you put it outside and you hope the frost doesn't get it, and then it grows, and then it's a little sapling like this one here, and it gets stronger and stronger, and then the day comes you think, I don't need to care for it anymore. It's standing by itself. It's a strong tree now. It's so rewarding to do that to people, to see them as baby Christians mature and grow into strong Christians who can stand on their own two feet. There's nothing better than investing in the lives of people. Make sure, actually, that you invest more in people than things or money. People are the most important. It's so rewarding. Claire and I found that at our previous church. There was just one particular ministry we were involved in called YPS, stood for young people on Sunday. So the young people would come around our house from time to time on Sundays. We did this in conjunction with the two other pastors. And they would ask difficult questions, the kind of difficult, tricky questions that teenagers have. We would feed them first, real food, and then feed them the answers. And it took effort. Claire was in charge of the food. They're hungry teenagers, so they just ate and ate and ate and ate. And it was exhausting because you'd did two services, two full-on services, and then you come back and you'd have to do it all again. And it busted my brain because the questions were so tricky. I had to study and study and study during the week. And then you were finally done, and then they want you to stay and chat till 10 o'clock. And then by the time the last one was out the door, you were ready to just collapse on the sofa in a coma, but you still had to clear up bits of trodden in pepperoni pizza off of the carpet and stuff like that. It took effort, but it was so worth it. It was so rewarding because it was for the sort of secondary school age group, and they'd come in at, 10 or 11 years old, and they'd be so immature, and so they didn't have really any knowledge really about the Christian faith, especially about difficult questions. And you'd have them for that 5 years, and they'd leave with this knowledge and this maturity, and you felt they're ready to face the big bad world now, to go to university or work or whatever it is. It wasn't just us that put the input in, it was the other pastors and the youth leaders. It's a combined effort. But it was so rewarding to see those young people equipped and ready for life outside their home or without their parents looking after them and so on. That's why we do it. That's what motivates us. We put the effort into one another, even though it's hard, because we can help each other along the way, see each other grow and cope and deal with life. Here's the second reason, the thing that empowers us. It's as we consider what Christ has done, how he built us up, that's why he came. As we think about that and take that in, we become empowered to build up other people. If you just stop and think about it, Christ is the embodiment of all that Paul has been talking about. Because he came into the world with all his gifts and all his power, not for self-aggrandizement or for showing off, but he came to build us up. To build us from death to life, and then to continue building us into spiritual maturity. And talk about effort. He put in so much effort, he sweat blood. He put in so much effort, eventually killed him. He did that for us. And the more we grasp his passionate desire to build us up, the more desire we find we have to build others up. And so that's what we can do to ensure that we're empowered. And we're going to do that now as we come to communion. As we take communion now, let's consider, let's absorb, let's take in how Christ came to build us up. He came to build us up from being spiritual zombies into living stones. I bet you didn't know the Bible talked about zombies. It does. Ephesians chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. As for you, you were dead in your transgressions and sins. What's a zombie? It's the living dead, the walking dead. This person is active and there's movement, but they're dead. That was us, spiritually speaking. We were dead in our transgressions and sins in which you used to live when you followed the ways of this world. But then we encountered Christ. We realized what he did on the cross for us. We came and we said, I've transgressed. I've sinned. I was dead to you. I didn't care about you at all. But you came and gave yourself to me to build me up from death to life. And it didn't stop there, did it? Christ not only saved us, but he now builds us into living stones. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 4 and 5. As you come to Jesus, the living stone, rejected by humans, but chosen by God and precious to him, you also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house. So it's like every time we take communion, it's like Jesus is whispering to us, I love you. I'm here for you. I'm with you. Know that my purpose for you, having saved you, is to build you up, to make you strong. That's what I want for you. And as we take in how Christ builds us up, we find that the power to build others up is released as we're filled with gratitude over what he did for us. So let's do that now. Let's take in physically the bread and the wine, and let's take in by faith what he did for us on the cross.